Hello and welcome to this episode of the ESG Fitness Podcast. I've got Andy and Ruth with me today. Andy, how are you?
Good, thank you. How about yourself?
I'm all right. Ruth, how are you?
I'm fine. I said fine. I was just saying I thought I was getting a cold, but I think I'm just tired.
How was High Rocks?
It was really good. And I had a clear goal, and that was to not feel awful at the end of it. And I did enjoy it and I felt good at the end. And I was like, there is that part of you. It's like, could have pushed harder, could have hated it. But then I'm like, all I want to do next time is do better, but still only put the same effort in. So I just got to get a bit fitter and for that.
Such a strange way to think about it. Yeah, do you know what? I want to do it to the point that I'm not really pushing myself too hard and I still enjoy it a little bit.
Well, there's a reason for this, and that's because I watched my husband do it, who hadn't done as much training as like I train all the time anyway, and he looked like death doing it, and I was like, nope, not keen on that. Not keen on that approach. So I was like, I pushed myself, obviously. But I was like, but afterwards I wasn't crawling through the finish line.
Could have worked harder.
Yeah. Could have worked. I mean, there, yeah, but also, my partner had done an ultra marathon the week before, so I think that, yeah, she's a good runner.
Yeah,
Yeah,
wow.
it was good she'd done that because, that meant that I wasn't being dragged along by her.
It is pretty mad. Like, I just find the marketing behind HYROX mad. Like, it's so random. Someone has just come up with, oh, we run a little bit, and then you carry some kettlebells, and then you do like this, you do some wall balls, and then you. It's so weird to me. Like, I mean, it's amazing and like great, and people are obviously like really getting into it and stuff. But it's quite an like it's an interesting concept that it's just like, I guess
Yeah.
any sport essentially is that, right? Of just like, oh, we just kind of made something up, and now everyone's doing it, but.
They've tapped into the market. They've tapped into the market where CrossFit kind of lose people with the home gymnastic side of stuff. And it means that basically even general Jim Joes can go and do it. Because we were at it on Sunday because one of Laura's bridesmaid was at it, was competing at it in Glasgow. And it's all shapes and sizes, all levels of fitness. Whereas CrossFit, to compete and try to go and do a lot of the stuff, you need to be pretty seriously fit to get a lot of the stuff done, especially the gymnastics elements. So taking that out of it makes it. It's and I tell you what, it's a cracking atmosphere. Music's bouncing, people are. They've. I will say that the guy, whoever it was that was doing the sort of the voiceover over the music. Wow, stop. Just stop talking, mate. So I was like, oh, we start singing along with some of the songs. You're like, mate, just no. You folk are running around going, what the hell is happening? Is this you?
Yeah.
Yeah, you know what? I think it's awesome. And I actually really like that it's like been made more accessible and it's like in some ways like less elitist. Like you're saying, any shape and size can do it. You
Yeah.
just obviously run faster if you're fitter or
Or
do it
walk, yeah.
quicker pace. Yeah.
Yeah,
There
walk
are
it.
people walking.
Yeah.
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 And actually that's the thing I did notice is that like it isn't the gym, well, maybe at the higher level. It is those gym bros, but a lot of the time it's the runners that are doing pretty well because you can kind of get through the exercises anyway. But if you can make up time on the runs and you've got the endurance and the fitness there, then they're often doing better. So and it is nice seeing those people of like any background just coming in and giving it a go, all ages as well. Like we had, I don't know, in Madrid and probably in Scotland as well, some quite old people, older people doing it, just giving it a crack, which I just loved. Yeah.
Great. Right, let's get on with some questions.
Okay. Right. I did say answered to here. So just checking that I'm not doing one we've done before. If I am, I'm sure you'll tell me. It said, I'm in a hard mode with work, food, and fitness Monday to Thursday. Come the weekend, I completely switch off, which aligns with social friends' goals, but not the health and fitness. I feel I have an angel and then a devil on my shoulder. How can I make my head spin less and find some sort of balance?
Andy, what do you think?
One, excuse me, I just got some dog hair on my face. One, less pressure on yourself over the weekends. So you already, if you're already claiming that you're going to be failing because you're hitting the weekends and slacking and stuff, that may already happen because you're kind of self-prophesizing it. But number two, time to adult yourself a little bit across the weekends. The unfortunately, at times when things start to slacken off like that, that's the times where you sometimes need to double down. And so a lot of people will stop tracking over the weekends. They're like, oh, it's cool. I've done Monday to Thursday or Monday to Friday. I'll not track the weekends. And generally, that's the ones that you need to track. Even if you're going to go slightly over, keep an eye on what you're doing and just make sure that you're within ballpark or just slightly over. But you kind of have to work out what's most important is having more freedom with your nutrition, and having been able to go out and have a few indulgences. Is that more important, or do you have a physique goal? Because if the physique goal is the number one, you're going to have to tidy the weekends up and be a bit tighter. But it just depends on what you value most. And
I would also say, you absolutely can have the best of both. And it's like, and I did a whole episode on this, the one before this, on budgeting and how, people think budgeting is boring, but the reason that you're budgeting is so you can do something better and cooler, right? And it's like you don't think twice about it with, if you're like, oh, I've got X amount to spend this week. Okay, so you can't go out for dinner every single night this week, but you can go out once. And really choose. And it's the same with your calories, right? If you want to lose fat, you want to be in a deficit, you've kind of got a budget here. Where are you going to spend those calories to get the most enjoyment out of them? What do you want to spend them on? What does actually, because a lot of this, instead of going out for brunch and dinner, maybe you're choosing one, or maybe you're doing both, but at dinner, you're making smarter choices, or at brunch, you're having a Americano instead of another latte. They're not huge differences. It doesn't take away all the enjoyment. It's just little tweaks that you need to make, and you're completely capable of doing it. The other thing I would say is that I would still try and win your morning on a weekend, because you'll feel much better. It doesn't, again, it doesn't really take away any enjoyment. Get up a little bit earlier, still get to the gym. The likelihood is all of your following behaviors will be more in line with your goals than they would have been if you hadn't done that, and you're kind of in the mode of oh well, it's the weekend now, I'll get back on it on Monday. And I would just test this out for a few weeks. I can guarantee you're not going to miss out on anything. It's such a mindset around oh well, if I'm dieting, then I couldn't possibly go out, couldn't possibly have any fun, couldn't have a social life, couldn't, you will have to sacrifice X. And I think it comes from comparing to people who aren't the same as you. As in, you're like, oh, I don't know, you see on Instagram, someone's like, well, if you want to get in shape, you'll have to sacrifice this. No, if you want to step on a bodybuilding show, for sure, you're going to have to sacrifice. If you want to get in shape, you don't have to make sacrifices. You will have to make compromises. You will have to think, okay, this is my budget. Where do I want to spend on? What's most important to me? Same as you do with literally everything in your life. I think sometimes people fall into the pattern of feeling like a little bit of a victim to dieting, or the fact that energy balance matters, when it's like the same is true with how much money you have to spend, or more to the point, how much time you have to spend on anything, right? We all have a week. How much time are you going to spend on each thing based on what's most important to you? Everything's kind of limited. So you then have to allocate, okay, what's most important to me? Where am I going to spend my time? More important than that to me, my energy. What's my energy going to go into? What's the most important parts of this week? And you kind of have to include your nutrition along with that.
I had a friend who said to me a little while, it was a while back, but I use her as an example quite a lot. Sorry to her. But she said she couldn't, she was like, I would love to go on a diet, but I can't because my weekends are just so busy. And I said to her, what are you doing at the weekend? She's like, well, I've got a meal this weekend with so-and-so, and I've got a last weekend I had this. And I was like, that's one thing, And she was like, she said to me, I've never thought about it like that. I just literally think of it as the weekend. And it was one thing. I was like, well, that doesn't need to impact everything. You can still do that one meal or that one thing. And it often we just, like Andy said, we have this kind of, we have things on at the weekend. So it's that perfectionist kind of thing, isn't it? View again.
Yeah, you're
But
exactly right. It still comes back to perfectionism and Or that kind of falling into, oh, well, it's the weekend now. You're right, like every other meal. Even if you have got three meals out on a weekend, you could still be in a deficit if you want to be. Or you could be about maintenance, but during the week in a deficit. And then, hey, overall, over the week, you're in a deficit. You're losing body fat.
I think I still eat a bit in a deficit during the week and the maintenance the weekend, not like hugely, but I reckon I probably do, just because during the week I'm very, very regimented with, like, I have the same breakfast and lunch pretty much most days. And at the weekend, it's not crazy, but it changes a bit because I'm doing more with the family, and I still focus on getting out for my doing my exercise and all of those things, but it just changes a bit and it probably just brings me up to maintenance.
No, I do exactly the same. I'm like, during the week, not only because I care about my body composition, but more because, like, when you're structured, you're not overthinking about anything. You know, it's there. You don't have to think, oh, what's for breakfast this morning? I've got enough stuff to think about. I don't want to be wasting my energy thinking about all these other things. So that's all quite like regimented. Then on a weekend, I do have more social events. I've got more like social eating, more time to think about enjoying food. And that kind of brings me up to around maintenance. Like, yeah, why not? And like you're saying, as long as it's not like, yeah, I only eat 1,000 calories in the week so that I can eat 5,000 calories on the weekend. But most people probably find it easier to be a bit more structured in the week and then a bit more
Yeah.
flexible on the weekend.
I mean, you were in a tapas bar during our group call the other day.
Yes. Well, one of my friends owns it, and that does come along with quite a lot of Padron peppers. So good.
I want a friend that owns a tapas bar.
Yeah, it's a very good one as well.
Okay.
Yeah. All right then. Okay, next question.
It's one from one of my check-ins, actually. It was how to address low body image as we get older. I can make, yeah,
Yeah,
go on.
this is a huge question. I think a lot of it comes from like appreciating the amazing things that your body can do, appreciating the amazing things that you can do that have nothing to do with the way that you look or nothing to do with your body. Yeah. And I think realizing like when you think about other people, it's like their body's the least interesting thing about them. You just care about like the person they are, the impact they can have. Like, I think if you take a bigger, broader view of like, okay, what's important? Normally people are like, it's the impact I can have on other people. It's the way that I want to show up. It's the way that I want to be remembered. And then you remember, like, you know, if you're wasting, and I say this, like, you're wasting so much time, so much emotion, so much energy thinking about the way that you look. I think that, honestly, for me, that was like a big thing in regards to body image. I was like, what a fucking waste. Like, I just got sick of it. I was like, why are you even thinking about that? What a waste of like brain energy. And I know it's not like quite that simple just to like switch it off, but what you can do is start ignoring it a bit, right? You'll still have days where you're like, I don't know, look in the mirror and you're like, oh, especially with aging, it's like, oh, well, you know, that used to be really tight and now it's not so tight anymore or something. So you will notice it. It's not to say that, like, you know, you're going to be completely immune to all of this, but instead of then ruminating on that and making it mean something about you, you're just like, huh, okay, I don't love the way that that looks, but I do appreciate all these other amazing things that my body has done and can do. And then you kind of move on with it. And then I'd say the other massive thing for me, and this isn't so much related to do with like body image and aging, but just body image in general, was, or more, this is more, I guess, like relationship with food in general, but setting bigger goals that are more than just like the way that you look. And I mean, it might be, but I don't mean like run a marathon or do high rocks. I mean like big, overarching life goals. Like what I was just talking about, like, how do you want to be remembered? What is actually important? And start trying to think, like, if I think about all the things I think about during a day, how much of it is actually geared towards like the important things versus worrying about stupid shit that's not gonna matter.
I think it's also important to remember that, not just about body image, but you know how much better you feel about body image when you're, like you said, when you're feeling better in yourself, but also to carry on pushing that body or believing that you can still do stuff. I do think there's a habit with aging that we can go. I hear it all the time when I'm like in the gym or anything, and say people go, I'm too old for this, or I can't do that anymore because I'm old. And it's actually often not people that aren't that old. It's just that they're finding it a bit harder now because they're probably a little bit more unconditioned than they have been in the past. But they can still get stronger and feel better and actually prove to themselves they can do those things still. So I think it's also not giving up on what your body's capable of.
Which is hard with all the stigma around aging, you know, because you're right. Someone messaged me today and was like, yeah, I don't know if it's just like, you know, what happens as you age. She was 32. I was like,
Yes.
you have to be kidding me. I was like, I'm sorry, but
Okay,
that's
come back in 10 years, pal.
yeah. I was like, you're 32 and you think this is like age. It's not. And do you know what the confounding factor is? A lot of people, when they get older, stopped it being as active. Right. And then they're like, oh, it's just aging. It's like, no. It's the fact that you're not as active. That's why like you're finding things harder because you've let that conditioning slip and you can absolutely bring it back. The other thing I will say is it, especially if you're going through menopause and especially if you're perimenopausal and you're going through like hormonal fluctuations, that can have a huge impact on your body image. And we see this in like your premenopausal monthly cycle. There's really good research on this that shows that certain weeks during the month, and I'm sure like any woman will anecdotally know this as well, it your body image is significantly worse. Now imagine that during menopause, when you have way more hormonal fluctuations, when they aren't cyclical, when you can't make as much sense of them, because it's not like, God, why do I feel so shit? Oh, wait, it's, you know, the week before my period. Okay, that might explain a bit. Let's like not pay as much attention to these feelings. Now, when that might happen at any time during the month, that's a lot harder to deal with, right? So there could be an element of that as well.
Yeah, 100%. Do you want any more to say on it? Shall I do next question? Next question? Okay. Okay. I don't know if it's a one from you, but it looks like you said I'd be interested to hear other people's distractions to get instant gratification rather than food, and if other people have worked through it and stopped that cycle. But were you just asking the group,
It's from
or
a
did you?
client.
It is one with your client. Okay. I didn't know if you were asking for people to comment on their
No. So
gratification.
what was the question?
It said I'd be interested to hear about people's distractions to get instant gratification rather than food, and if other people have worked through it and stopped that cycle. So looking at delayed gratification and instant gratification.
And
Yes.
what do you think?
I don't really have much in that one because I'm not really one about gratification, like instant gratification. So it doesn't really bother me. I kind of have always played the longer game with stuff like that. So I think once you settle down, to say to most people is everybody is extremely rushed to get to the end of the journey, when in actual fact, the process of the journey is the most exciting bit. So settle back and enjoy it. Like, you know, it's exactly as you said in the last question, the little things about, yeah, I'm in my 40s now. Things like being able to still training hard, still being able to push a decent amount of weight. That's the stuff that kind of I focus on with that, rather than I've got a couple of goals in end point, but they're not at the forefront at the moment. So kind of just enjoying the process.
You could focus on the instant gratification you get from doing the things that you want to, you should, or you feel like you should be doing those targets. Because although fat loss might not be an instant gratification, but if you go out for a walk, if you go and do to the gym, if you eat the food that is going to fuel you, you are going to get more short-term gratification if you focus in on it. You will feel better for doing those things. And I think people forget that they can actually get the short-term
Yeah, or they
feelings
just
as well
ignore
from
it.
that.
People are like, oh, I don't know, I want to build muscle. And they're like, oh, but it's going to take months and months and months. And exactly as Ruth's saying, yeah, building muscle will take months, if not years. But will feeling better immediately after going to the gym? No. But people ignore that, right? Like that is the immediate, or like you concentrate better because you've not had a really crappy lunch. You had like a nice big chicken salad or something as well. Like, And give yourself some credit. Allow yourself to feel a little bit smug. Like, hey, I could have had fish and chips, but instead I chose to have this other meal that's like way more in line with my goals. And I feel really good about that. We're so good at being like, if you'd had the fish and chips, you would have like beat yourself up, felt guilty about it. But when you go for the like quote unquote, I'm not even gonna say good, like if when you go for the option that's more in line with your goals, you don't, we're not good enough at like giving ourselves credit for that and then allowing ourselves to be like, yeah. Do you know what? I can be a bit proud of myself in that. I can wake up in the morning and be like, yeah, I chose the right option for me, considering my goal. So I think that helps. I've then also written something down here that I can't read.
And hold it up.
No, you won't be able to read it. It says, oh God, no.
Yeah, Emma. Were you going to talk about the distraction? Did she mention distractions? Yeah, so other things you can
Yeah.
do. Because there's surfing the edge as well, and things like that that you can do. Give you a moment to think about how good you felt for not doing it as well. But a lot of people
Well, I
will
also
go.
think, like, honestly, you kind of have to accept anything, and I mean anything worth having in life, requires like some kind of delayed gratification, whether that's I'm studying for an exam now to pass it later, to then get a job that I love, or to then, I don't know, whatever you're going to get from passing that exam. Or I'm doing the boring part of like learning to play the piano now so that I can be better at it later. Like almost anything that you think about, it requires some kind of delayed gratification that's actually worth doing. And I think the sooner you accept that, the sooner it becomes easier to kind of like embrace hard work. And I've kind of like, I always try and remind myself that, especially when you can't be bothered to do something or you want the easy option, it's like, well, most people would do that. And if you don't want to be average, then you don't want to do what most people will do. Then you kind of have to be like, yeah, this is going to be a bit harder, but I want more than average. You know, like I want these results. So it's worth putting in this effort. And then reminding yourself as well that like saying no to, you know, the easy option means saying yes to your goal and allowing yourself to feel good. But the thing is, you won't avoid the fact that, yeah, you'd probably get a bigger kick from having a chocolate bar right now than having an apple. But if you want the long-term goal, like you kind of have to accept that. I wouldn't always be looking for a way around it. It's like, oh, well, how can I make this less hard? Accept that it is hard. Like some things are hard. That's fine. Like it's hard isn't a reason not to do it. It'd be like completely misleading for us to be like, oh yeah, like losing fat and getting in shape isn't hard. Some people make it harder than it needs to be. But there is an element of like, yeah, there'll be times where you don't want to make that choice. But if you want the result, then you have to do it. And as someone who like struggles with impulse control, yeah, it is hard.
Yeah, I think it like you said that we spoke about this before. But so when you say some people make it harder, some lifestyles make it harder. If you are feeling kind of busy, overwhelmed, it can be harder to focus on the fact that you need to just stop. And that's when I think the surfing the edge comes in really well, handy, because you have like just stop, just give yourself a moment before you reach an im that impulse is there. Because if you are really stressed and like you're not really thinking properly, before you know it, you're having that out of body experience and you've grabbed whatever it is that has just flashed into your mind. So it there are certain times that it's going to be harder, but yeah.
Stop telling yourself it's not possible, because I think that happens a lot with when people are busy and they're like, oh, you know, I would do that, but I'm just too busy to do it. This is such a harsh like piece of advice, but or not even piece of advice, but just like observation. But it does not take more time to eat less. No one is too busy not to lose fat. Now, it might be harder and there might be like different like ways that we need to approach it, but like fundamentally, like you're more than capable. And I think that's one of the first things that like people need to accept, like stop putting excuses in the way. You are absolutely more than capable. And I always tell myself this, like with anything I'm working towards as well, it's like you're capable. Now the difference is like you're deciding not to do it. You know, if I was like, oh, you know what, I really want to, I don't know, put on a load of muscle, it's like, yeah, okay, you're capable, but I've decided I'm not willing to put in the time to do that. Okay, well, now that's on me. Like, I'm taking ownership for that, right? And then it becomes easier to change from that point rather than telling yourself that you can't, because it's very unlikely that you are actually going to achieve anything if you're constantly telling yourself you can't. If you're telling yourself, I could do that, but it's hard, and actually I made a choice not to do that, that's something that you can change. Now you're in control. Now you can change it if you choose to. And again, this isn't like being like, it's not so much blame, it's ownership, right? Like, you're not blaming anyone, you're just taking ownership of your actions. Yeah, if I do that, which I can, then I know I'll get this result.
Nothing on a whim. That's kind of what I think with, like, plan it in. You have those things, but make it at a time when you're choosing to. Just know, same with alcohol. I'm like, never just a whim. You know, if you want to have a glass of wine or whatever, make it a time that you've chosen to do it, where you know it's something you want to do, not because you get to the evening and you feel like, oh, I'm so stressed, I need a drink. Like, I'm just like, same with chocolate, whatever. Just make it something that isn't on a whim.
Yeah, and even sometimes it will be, you know, like, you don't want to take away like all your spontaneity, but just make sure you enjoy it. If someone's like, I don't know, it's been a long week, and they're like, do you want to go out for a glass of wine, and you hadn't planned it in, like, fine, go for it, but like, choose it and enjoy it. Not, and I agree, like, you know, not like at the end of the day, like, oh, I'm really stressed, I'll just eat this whole bag of Maltesers. It's like, that, you know, that that's not gonna be that enjoyable for you.
Not afterwards. You just, yeah, never feels as good as you think it's going to. We've got a double question from Maureen next. It says, number one, my partner's workouts consist solely of isometric movements. He does this as he has a lot of joint wear and tear from heavy lifting when he was younger. Curious to hear your thoughts on exercising in this way and the pros and cons of this. He is also really tall, 6'6" and very long limbed. Thanks.
Thoughts, Andy?
Well, isometric is the sort of lengthening part of the movement.
No, it's not.
Eccentric. No, isometric's a held work, so holding a position. I don't actually know if I agree with that in terms of joint wear and tear. I think a lot of it depends on the actual movement patterns and what he actually feels pain in. So if the coach has put it together and he's not feeling pain through any of it, it should be fine. But you could always, I think the issue that you have is with a lot of like wear and tear and injuries, etc., is trying and testing to find what works. And that's always the frustrating part of it. You're going to have to try and test. So I've got not a dodgy knee, but my knee doesn't like certain exercises, doesn't like seated leg curls, but can quite happily handle lying leg curls. So a lot of it's about finding what your body can and can't do, and then working around that. But if somebody's set that up for them and it's working for them, happy days.
It'd be good for rehab, I think, if you've got an injury in a specific area. I've never seen like a whole workout only isometric movements really being used before, but I definitely have used isometrics for people like, if they've got a specific issue and they're struggling to go through a range of motion. And also often it's because it's painful. It's not necessarily because you're doing more damage to that joint by going through that range of motion. It's because it's not very nice to feel pain when you're doing it. So like a wall sit, for example, you could say is an isometric, and that can have you just building some strength without taking your joints through a continuous range of motion.
The slight issue I'd have with it is, especially as you age, and honestly, especially if you're in pain, a lot of the aim of training is to help you live your life as long as possible in an independent way. And isometric strength it's better than nothing by a mile, for sure. And having some in might be useful, but like, I just know I've worked with like stroke rehab previously and stuff, and like a lot of what we do is like, you know, what would it look like to take the kettle off this table? It, you know, it's less about like, oh, can we do squats and stuff? It's more like sit to stand. Can you get off this chair? Can you walk over to the other side of the room? Can you take the kettle off? Can you pick something up off the ground? Like, it's actually practical. Like, this is living. This is what you need to do to be able to live pain-free on your own independently. That's way more important. Like, if you're at a point that you're that elderly, that that's something to be of high priority. It's like that should be the focus, not can you hold this plank.
Yeah.
Can you hold your position when you hit the floor?
But you'd only ever normally be a short term, like, so if somebody was starting and they didn't feel strong enough to do those things, right, you'd put it in as to build the strength so that they then can. That's the thing. That's why I said it's kind of a rehab. If somebody's got an injury, you might do it as a bit of a rehab thing, but I've not seen it used as a long-term approach really before.
Yeah,
but
I think for a lot of the stuff is it's more about movement. So actually yeah. moving like a, going through a range of movement, even with extremely lightweight body weight, rather than like doing body weight squats rather than loaded squats, and just finding the comfortable positions to play around in. You know, so after having second knee surgery, I found that my squat pattern changed quite considerably from prior to it. And just because of the way that my knee needs to move. So, you know, a lot of it is about just finding that movement, and also like the isometric stuff. It's going to be honest with you, it's pretty fucking boring. Have you ever done a wall sit for more than 3 minutes? It's shit.
But also, like with a lot of the things, like you said, with movement, you do, people get scared to use it. Can be a fear thing. You get scared, like, particularly in shoulders, I think. I don't know if you I'm sure you get it a lot. If people can say, I can't do this because I've got a sore shoulder, but actually then it's getting worse and worse because they're not moving it at all.
Was it Ed Baker?
One of the most interesting things about, like, when you learn how pain works is that you need to start moving in those patterns for your body to be like, oh, okay, like the pain isn't there, or I don't need to be scared of this. And a lot of it is like memory. And actually Ed gave this really good example of, I thought it was so, so good. Like, you know, when you listen to a song that you started listening to like right after you broke up with someone, and you'll hear it again. Or like a lot of people get this, like, I don't know, if a song's played at a funeral or something, it just brings back so much emotion. Even though, like, say it's your ex and it was like 10 years ago and you're like, you have no feelings for them anymore. You barely even think about them. But that song is like, oh my God, I can remember that heartbreak. It's the same kind of neural passages, right? So I had like what's termed as like phantom pain in my back for a while after surgery, because I expected, every time I bent over, I expected to feel pain. And so I did. And that's like, that pain is real, but there's no reason for it anymore. And you have to get your body used to it and like comfortable with moving through those patterns.
Was it said fear and pain inhabit the same neural pathways, don't they? So your body can't distinguish between the two, and it automatically goes straight for fear because you're worried about what happens. And it's the same with any injury. You will always stop. You'll always shield the part of body that has been injured, because your body remembers how fucking sore it was when it got injured, so it doesn't want to do it again. But I think one of the most interesting ones that Ed had mentioned was the fact, just choosing the choice of language around it. You don't have a bad back. You have a back. It's fine. It can move. If you've done your rehab and you've done all the stuff to do to strengthen it, your back is now no longer a bad back. It's fine. You just need to reteach your brain to understand that it's going to move in certain patterns, and the pain will not be there if you've done all the work around it to get it rehabbed. So it was pretty, I really enjoyed that talk. It was a good one.
I heard it. So I quite liked the whole motorway. Like, if you've been in pain for a long time, you've built up a motorway of, you know, the neurological kind of pathways. It's a motorway that's there, and the more you feel it, the bigger those roads become. And what you want to do is get it from back to being like a little A road where it's not heading in that direction so much. So it's like learning to tie your shoe to begin with. That pathway is smaller, it's harder, you're messing it up, and then it's such a memory, then you can do it so easily. And it's the same with pain. It's complicated though, isn't it? Because then you start going, well, I'm not really in pain, but it is a real, you are feeling it. It is a real feeling. It's just knowing that there's a lot more to it. It's chronic pain
Yeah,
is
and I
quite.
mean, like sometimes pain, I mean, pain's always there to protect you. It's just sometimes your brain thinks you need to be protected when you don't need to be protected. And other times, like, you definitely do need to be protected.
Yeah, it's not
And you know
necessarily
what's so
true.
interesting? I can't remember where I was listening to this, but it was talking about this. There's a condition where people don't feel pain.
Yes.
And like initially you kind of think, oh well, like surely that wouldn't be so bad. But then you realize that actually you need to feel pain. It's how you learn. And that like this woman had like scratched as a child, scratched her own eyes out and like bitten like her tongue off and stuff. Like she can't speak as an adult. She had to like have her eyes sewn shut for a period of time because but if you can't feel pain, it's like you're just like trying to discover stuff as a child. And like, you know, like kids pick stuff up, put them in the mouth, and like, and then yeah. So I mean, it's awful, obviously, if you can't feel any pain.
And
Yeah.
yes, I was thought you were going to say I'd heard of one where the girl, like somebody was seriously burning themselves, you know, risk of you don't feel the hot stove. And there's also the other way around where people just get stroked and then feel agonizing pain. So there's extremes, but it's knowing that it's not always an injury. Just pain isn't always an injury. It can be emotional and all sorts of things as well. Anyway, Maureen's got another question. Can I go on to question two? When I am going to failure, should it be absolute, not a chance failure, or probably could push for one or two more if I tried really hard.
Probably aiming at one or two more. You don't want to go to, well, it depends on what you're doing as
I was
well.
going to say the
And
opposite.
the piece of kit that you're using. Like you don't want to go to complete failure with a barbell when doing squats, because that is going to end badly potentially. Same with a bench, like a bench press. Whereas dumbbells, you probably could go to failure because you can get rid of them quite easily.
Yeah,
For
or
me,
like, you know, if you're going to go to failure, do a drop set on a machine.
yeah.
And some people, you know, elite powerlifters go to failure on like compound lifts, but they also have a spot. They're very well trained and they have a high risk of injury. And we don't need that. You know, if you're like, I want to build some muscle and get in shape, there's no way we're going to have you doing one rep max deadlifts. Like, there's absolutely no need for it. But what you might do is push your body to failure, or like, you know, you might do a leg press to failure. And then drop the weight a bit, really push yourself to failure. And then, you know, we wouldn't have you doing that on your own in a squat rack with poor form, you know?
That's going to end so badly.
Yeah. That is something we get asked occasionally, isn't it? About squatting to failure and do you need to practice like dropping the bar and so on. And I'm always like, I don't squat to fail. I don't tend to back squat to failure. I'd rather not have to bail out of the bar. Thanks.
Actually, one thing I think that a lot of people do need to learn is how to fail out of an exercise and get rid of a bar or get rid of dumbbells, because there you see some pretty horrific videos of folk getting pinned under bar when they're squatting or bench and stuff like that. Bench is also one I would never go into failure. You need a spot. You don't do that by yourself.
I
Barbells,
need a good spot, you know, someone
yeah,
who actually knows what they're doing, not like,
not to
yeah.
help you,
Not
not in a
somebody who
sneaky way.
bent over rows the
Yeah.
bar and you're trying to bench.
Or like
And some people.
one when you're like, do you know what? I'm still absolutely fine. Don't even touch the bar. That pisses me off. And then, or the opposite, where I don't know, someone about, oh, can you spot me? I'm like, yeah, no worries. And then they're like, yeah, no, I can't. Like they just like drop the bar. I'm like, what? No. My spotting is like, I will take 5 kilograms of weight off this so that you can rack it. Not, I'm just going to take like the whole weight of a bar on a bench press off you. Like,
Yeah. If you think about the way that the bench works as well, if you go down with the bar, there's going to be an awkward 69 position ending up there somewhere.
there's a guy at the gym who is, well, he's doing strongman now, but he was doing powerlifting and he'd be like, can I borrow you to spot me for my squat? And I'm like, okay. And then I'm there and I'm thinking he's got a lot of weight on his back and he holds it quite far down his back. And I'm like, I mean, I'm not sure, even if I'm going under his arm a little bit, that there's going to be
Yeah,
much I
but
can.
Ruth, he just wants you to spoon him. That's why he's getting you to
I mean, I really don't think it's a very small gym. He's one of the trainers. I'm pretty sure he doesn't. But I think there's the other guy that did it to him once, and he went down. I've got a video of it, and he spotted him. But then when he started to fail, he accidentally like just grabbed pec. And I was like, it's just a good job it wasn't a woman, wasn't it? That you just go in. But no,
At that
it can
point, you know, if it's that bad, I don't think you care. Yeah.
yeah,
My boobs, just like make sure I don't come.
just crack
Save
on.
me. Save me.
Yeah, so good spot is important. Right, it's a question from Emma. It says non-health related, what country slash place that you haven't been to before would you like to visit and why?
That's from me.
It says question for podcast, non-health related, what
Oh.
country? And then there's another one that is health related. Do you not want that one?
Yeah, no, fine. I want to go to Thailand.
Yeah.
But I'm just not going because the time zone is just too busy on work-wise at the moment.
I'd like to go to Costa Rica, but I'd also like to go to I'd also like to go to Thailand, Vietnam, Cambodia. There's quite a few. There's a long list for me. And Japan.
What about
That's
you,
it.
Andy? Japan or Argentina?
Mm.
Oh, I want to go to Colombia as well.
You'll never come back.
Yeah.
I'd like to go horse riding
Aim
in a
of new business is smuggling drugs. I've got a new business on Yeah, that's obviously the primary reason I want to go.
the go.
Oh, everyone just says it's like unbelievable. But then I was talking to, because I was actually looking at going to Colombia, and my mum was like, "Did you just pick the two most dangerous places in the world,
Yeah, I
like
think
South Africa and Colombia?" I was like,
depending on where you go in Colombia, it's pretty horrific.
it's pretty
Like,
bad.
yeah, Medellin and stuff like that's apparently just fucking like,
That's exactly where I want to go.
yeah, you
Oh.
it's a little bit certain places. I think you can, it's a little bit like, I think if I remember rightly, someone told me Jamaica is great if you're in a resort, but horrifically dangerous if you're out with your resort. And I think Colombia is like that. You need to do a lot of stuff with like guides, etc., because otherwise you'll disappear and people want money for you. It's an interesting country. But I'd quite like Argentina, but and Japan, but I know that I would end up getting my head chopped off by the Yakuza if I went to Japan for just some shit reason. So it's dangerous. You can be anywhere's dangerous if you go in the wrong places.
Agreed. Yeah, I'd like to
Yeah,
go
I
to.
think that's quite a nice line of like, anywhere's dangerous if you go to the wrong places, but some places are significantly more
Oh
dangerous.
yes, that very much so. Yep. South
And
Africa,
Emma's got a list.
mad sod.
Yeah.
No, do you know what's strange is that like I really value feeling safe. So it, but they just seem like such cool places. It's just annoying that they're also quite dangerous. But I
You
even
can.
remember like it at certain places that I know certain times I've been in London and stuff, and just realizing like how much less safe I feel than in Scotland. Like now I know that stuff can happen anywhere and like whatever, but
You also live in Dundee. That's like fucking, it's like Beirut of Scotland.
it's not though. Like the thing is,
It's
yeah,
not.
if you go to the back of Dundee and you walk around like a, I don't know, but really it's
It's
not.
not the same, is it? It's completely different.
I mean, there's Devon is pretty safe.
Yeah, Devon, safe. In fact, I stopped to, I can't remember. I think I just wanted to stop because, oh no, it was because my back was so bad. I stopped by the side of the road, right? It within like 3 minutes of stopping, two, and it was actually a little bit annoying. So I was like, I'm fine, just leave, like, I just want to be on my own at the side of the road. Don't stop. But like, cars like slowed down. Everything okay? Do you lift anywhere? I'm like, no, fine.
I reckon
Like,
it's probably down the road from my house because you had to go down the like I think about 5 minutes from my home that day when you were traveling. I wasn't here,
yeah.
but I was, yeah, I think I was like, I bet that it is very much like that here.
Yeah.
You can't
Very
hide.
nice. All right then.
Some
Another
health
question.
one. Yeah, it says if you could only do one upper and lower body exercise forever, what would it be and why? I mean, we know yours.
You're going
Pull-ups.
tricep extensions today, are you?
I thought it was going to be tricep extensions. So she's gone off piece because you were saying triceps the other day.
Oh yeah, triceps are good. I'm also big into single arm rows at the moment as well.
Yeah.
Obviously, I wouldn't have a lower body exercise.
Oh.
Do any.
Calf
No,
raises.
lunges. Do you know what? Lunges and pull-ups.
For me, I would go for lower body, I go split squat because I do actually like a split squat. And you can be pretty, you don't need, you can be pretty, you can make it hard even if you've got no, not much equipment. And then upper body, I'd be tempted by like a bent over row or something like that. So yeah, quite like that. Andy?
Leg press probably. Enjoying leg press at the moment. And upper body, I'm actually really enjoying chest supported rows just now. Working quite nicely. That and a fat chest supported row, and probably because it's the same position, I would chuck in a superset of a Kelso shrug.
Mm. What
Wait,
I quite like
what's
a Serrano.
a Kelso shrug's basically the chest supported row position, and you're just pulling you're shrugging back through rather than a pull towards the ears. It's like a prone shrug. So actually
I
goes
got So you're telling me if you had one exercise to do, you would pick
chest supported rows.
scapular retraction. Yeah, I was
Scapular
gonna say,
retraction.
oh yeah, do you know what I do? Like a
Honestly, my back's developed quite nicely because of that. I've just that's the only extra exercise I've been chucking in. I think it's also, do you know what? At the moment, it's also helping me rehab my shoulder, which I'm like, this is amazing. So, yeah.
I quite like a
So, like,
Serrano press.
I agree. I bet they're awesome. But like, if you had one exercise, you wouldn't pick such a like.
Niche one.
I mean,
I'd quite to do a pec minor dip.
yeah.
Ideally, you'd go for something a bit compound, wouldn't you? That you can like hit more than one muscle group. But
Yeah, hence
I don't
why
know.
pull-ups freaking
I
awesome. Like,
know you've done. That's a good one. I went bent over row, and I was thinking, oh, hit the hamstrings a bit, blah, blah, blah. But then I was like, oh, it probably wouldn't be the one I'd actually do if I only had one upper body exercise. But it's really hard, really hard.
don't put that evil on us.
Okay.
I mean, if you were thinking about it, you'd want something that was like a pull. I mean, like maybe it would be like a. Does curl and press count as one exercise?
That's what I was
Squat
gonna
to a
say.
squat to curl and press,
Yeah.
the whole shebang.
Because I was thinking curl and press, and I was like, is that cheating to do that?
Yeah.
But it makes
All right.
sense. All right. But there we go. That's the complicated one there. Another?
Yeah.
Here you go. So thank you so much. Oh, no. Hang on. No, that's just somebody thanking you for answering the question last time. So that was nice. This was one I got asked in check-in. I have to be honest, I didn't know what it was, so I put it here to see if you guys did. It says, does anyone do BoYo diaries or have any views on it? And I don't know what a BoYo diary is.
Did you Google it?
Yeah, and I couldn't find, so I was like, I'm going to put it in check-in. I don't know if I'm just being,
I've never heard of it. That doesn't say
Andy?
much.
Yeah, look,
No.
BoYo diaries. All I've got is.
Know what comes up for me? The Toy Boy Diaries, a
Yeah,
book. I've
that's
got
what I've
the Good
got.
Boy Diaries.
Yeah, well, I've got Toy Boy Diaries as
Oh my
well,
God,
so
I
I'm in
also
it.
have Dope Boy Diaries. Hello.
Oh, I've got a Facebook page, BoYo Diary here, but only two people are talking about it. Writing about life in general, sharing funds, and maybe it's that.
I've also got the Bye Boy Diaries. Hello. This is a Reddit thread. I
That's
came out last year.
that's a serious rabbit hole, Emma. Shut
I
that
know.
now.
Can I just
I
say
came.
the problem with Googling these things is now when I'm watching TV in the evening, definitely the like the way that they market to you. My husband's like, have you been looking at like and it's like random things that I might have, because then you suddenly get targeted adverts towards it, and all I'll have done is be Googling to find out something for a client. And I'm like, brilliant, now this is all coming up. So later I'm gonna get Toy Boy Diaries coming up on my Amazon Prime
Oh,
advert.
there you
There we go. Okay, well that's good because I didn't know what that was, so maybe other people know. It says I'm keen to get coaches' take on how to stay motivated and also self-compassionate, e.g. during 30HD when you're feeling really run down and had a bad day. I've had a wobble this week. My husband is working mega hours and I'm single parenting our teething 6-month old with no help. So struggling with sleep and finding time to do every workout. All got too much today and I've massively eaten my feelings and biscuits and feel awful. This week has also been my birthday, so I've eaten out a few times as well. So very conscious I'm over my calories for my weekly average. Steps fine, but I've managed three workouts. I want to draw a line under it and move on, but it's feeling a bit meh. So I think he just wants to know how to stay motivated and practice self-compassion.
I think you need to be realistic. This is why I'm like, do a weekly intention plan every week. You set yourself up with probably too high expectations that week. It can thinking that you could do the exact same as when you're not single parenting and you've not got loads of other stuff going on. Like realistically, the weeks where you have got more support, sure, you can probably hit your like higher end of your range targets or your more optimal side. But the weeks that you know things are going to be harder, set yourself realistic targets. Okay, well, can I get in 2 20-minute workouts this week? Can I do 8,000 steps instead of my usual 12,000 steps? Can I, you know, whatever, how am I going to make this easier for myself? Am I going to struggle to find time to cook food? Okay, let's make a plan around that. What are easy go-to meals? Or can I prep ahead on Sunday when I do have a bit of support and someone else is helping me with childcare so that later on in the week it's easier? Or do I order out more often this week, but make time to have a little look at what I can order out that's actually going to fit with my calories a little bit better? Like, plan ahead a little bit, look forward a little bit, and make it easier for yourself, not harder for yourself. Like, work with yourself, not against yourself. That would be my tip. In regards to staying motivated, motivation comes and goes. Like, it's not always going to be there. But I think you'll be more motivated by a plan that you can actually think you can stick to this week versus being like, oh, I've got no hope. Because it seems to me like what happened is you tried to go in and think, I can achieve everything I could normally achieve while I'm also single parenting and I've got all this other stuff going on, and then found that you couldn't, and then thought, oh, do you know what? Doesn't matter. I'll just use this as a reason to then like go fully off track, and then you're beating yourself up for it. So work with yourself. What can you achieve this week?
Yeah, I think you're right. I think it's a lot of it is about looking forward to what's coming up. And exactly as you said, Emma, it's like, you know, on a week that you know it's going to be an absolute shit show, you have your non-negotiables, which is the lower end of the scale for you. And then if you can get them ticked off and you get them ticked off successfully, that's when you become motivated because you're getting shit done despite everything happening. And I think because you've set yourself too high a bar, like, and I think this is the thing, I think people think that you need to have the same level of bar week on week, month on month. You don't. You can change that bar to what's coming up. So, you know, if you know you've got 2 weeks where you have support, you've got help for the kids, you've got everything's going to go well, you know you can dial in hard for those 2 weeks and you can set your bar slightly higher. But then when your partner's away working, you bring your bar back down, get your non-negotiables knocked off the board, and it keeps you ticking over. And I think a lot of that is just for motivation side of stuff. I tell a lot of people this is motivation. It's quite strange. So when people start a new process, they all think they're motivated. They're not. It's the adrenaline of a new process. This is exciting. That's not really motivation. It's the, oh yes, we're something new. Motivation comes at the back end of it all. It comes after. So it comes after you put the hard work in and you've got the results that you want. Then you become motivated because you can see what you can achieve once you've got all those boxes ticked off. So, but again, don't be so hard on yourself. Just navigate as best you can and drop the bar when you need to. And know when you're making excuses and when an actual something comes up that is an excuse that is like relevant. I had a check-in like that today. Someone's like, oh, you know, this has all happened this week. So, you know, I'm feeling like I've not achieved anything. I'm like, you've managed to navigate the week from hell. That's like boxes ticked straight away. They're wins. Like, never, regardless of the rest of it, you still managed to get in 8,000 steps as well as all the shit that's basically happened. Like, that's wins. Be motivated by that. Be proud of that, the fact that you've managed to get through this week and it's not all gone to shit. You've not went and started eating whatever's in the cupboard. You've managed to stay on top of stuff. Just be a bit more compassionate to yourself, a bit more empathetic with yourself, because we're all very hard on ourselves and that doesn't help.
I think exactly what you just said, Andy, that point about I'm way more impressed at that client who's like, I still did 8,000 steps, even though all this other stuff happened. Then on the week that she had absolutely nothing on, full childcare, week off work, and she got 12,000 steps in. That's, you know, it's easy when you're highly motivated. It's easy when nothing goes wrong. Like those weeks are great. Tick them off, pat on the back. Great. But it's the hard weeks that are the impactful ones, right? And it's the workouts you don't want to do that matter. And it's the time that you did go on a little walk and get your steps up a little bit that makes more of a difference than the day it was really, really easy. If you want to, like, all of your results come from the average of your actions over time, right? And most people focus on their good weeks and trying to make them perfect. You will improve that average so much more by trying to make your quote unquote bad weeks just a little bit better. They're the weeks that trip you up. Like everyone's all like, oh, you know, kind of, oh, but I'm annoyed at myself because I only got 11,000 steps, not 12,000 steps. And it's like, that's not the week that having any impact on your progress. It's the week where you thought, oh, fuck it, I'll just eat whatever I want and do absolutely nothing. That's the week that's impacting your progress. So if you could just make that, and we're not saying make those weeks perfect because it's not realistic, right? Your 100% looks different every week, depending on the other stuff that you've got going on. But can you make those a bit better? That's going to improve your average.
We are so good at focusing on the things that we're not doing. And I think that's why coaching works, because it's good to have a reminder from someone else. It's almost like permission to know that it's okay to not be achieving everything. But this girl has done exactly the right thing by asking in the group, because everyone will say the same. I think when it's someone else, it's really easy to go, no, you're fine. Realistically, this makes sense. But when it's you feel like it's really hard to focus on those positive things. So,
Oh, yeah, I
yeah.
mean that's why I've got a coach. The amount of like I've been having loads of conversations this week, and the amount of people that are like, yeah, no, I was thinking about coaching, but I already know what to do. I'm like, I know what to do. I still have a coach. Like, it's that. It's the perspective. It's the support. It's the reminder. It's someone external who unconditionally wants the best for you, and has
We
no other
agree with
biases.
you.
I think that's so powerful. Like, when Andy can tell me what to do because he's got the perspective. He just wants me to reach my goals, nothing else. Whereas I've got all this other stuff going on in my head, and am I doing enough? And should I do this? And should I do that? It's like sometimes you just need someone to be like, give yourself a bit of a break. Look at all the amazing stuff you've done. Now let's crack on. Here's the focus.
Voice of reason.
Yeah. Okay,
Really.
right. We need to round this up because I have the EIQ live coming up.
Oh.
Thank you for the excellent questions. Thank you for being the question master, Ruth. Andy, thank you for your incredible brain. And we will see you all later in the week to answer more questions. Bye.
Show.